Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, and I am a person of the global majority. I'm trying to see if it rolls off my tongue, because we're not black no more. That's not working. We are not people of color. That's not working. We are not BIPOC. I mean, I'm not sure if that ever picked up. Let's be very clear. I mean, BIPOC, they were trying to get some momentum on BIPOC, but BIPOC, black, indigenous, people of color, they never kind of took off. What took off instead is the people of color, which is some folks saying colored people. Let's be very clear that I can't be the only professor whose students are saying, hey, you know, I want to talk about colored people. I'm like, colored people? Do you know what you're saying when you call us colored? I'm saying, like, do you know the throwback to the 1930s that you're getting involved in when you call us colored? But when you say people of color, people get all confused and think that people of color means colored people, and it does not. So now there is a movement to have a different term. And this term would include indigenous people, Latinx people, Asian people, Arab people, Middle Eastern people, African people, and the term would be people of the global majority. That's what they're talking about now, that we are now people of the global majority. The acronym is PGM. It's always an acronym that's supposed to be affirming and inclusive. So that's the new thing. So instead of, I'm sorry. So people of the global majority, the acronym PGM, and you can also substitute that for global majority people, GMP, because apparently black folks and indigenous folks and Latinx folks and Arab folks and Asian American folks and African folks, we still got to figure out what to call ourselves. What's interesting is I have never seen this kind of discussion around what to call ourselves happening in the white community. And I went and I looked at Nell Painter's book, The History of White People. I mean, there's never been like, well, what should we, are we Caucasians? Are we, it's always been, we are Americans, period. That it's everyone else who have to have a hyphen there. African hyphen America. Asian hyphen America, Hispanic hyphen America. And the hyphen is not always written, but it's assumed that you are someone who's being included in America, but not part and parcel of America. That the only people that are able to claim the term American in this country has always been people that are not of color, people who are not of the global majority. I'm just going to make my own term, right? PNGM, people not of the global majority. That no matter how we turn it, we've got to find a way to stop centering whiteness and decentering everybody else. Justina has a little clip around BIPOC. Justina, let's take a listen to it, and then I want to talk a bit about COVID-19.
History in the United States of minoritized groups creating new labels for themselves in order to describe their social identities and relationships to power. In 1977, the term women of color was created by non-white women to express the social, political, cultural, and economic solidarity across these groups for increased collaboration and visibility. Loretta Ross called the term women of color a political designation. These new terms were what we call people first terms. A people first term means that we name the humanity of groups connected to their social identity. The intention of BIPOC, or Black Indigenous People of Color, is to center the experiences of Black and Indigenous peoples in the United States and to make a distinction between these two groups and other groups of color.
Brought to you by Pacific Lutheran University.
So that was from Pacific Lutheran University. A little bit of background on BIPOC. So now, I want to spend the last bit of time we have talking about Johnson & Johnson, Maryland, Baltimore City, and vaccination hesitation. So it came out that here in Maryland, Johnson & Johnson had a problem with their doses, ruined at a city plant. Now, all right, there's something about this story that just doesn't sit right with me. Like, I always get a little something whenever Baltimore City gets centered in the middle of any story that's not positive, every single time. From our babies freezing in school, we were dealing with that. Remember the pictures went viral about us not having the proper heating systems? Remember that? And everybody was upset. I was concerned. I really appreciate the work that Aaron Maben and others did around that. But let's be clear, 2021, it's not like the heating system has been fixed. I mean, we're still having those issues. We're just not in school. Remember, we were in the center of the news with the gun trace task force when the GTTF ran through this city, the biggest gangster group running through the city, dropping, you know, fake guns, jumping out on young boys, kicking doors in a drug dealer, stealing money, running drugs. Yeah, GTTF in the middle of the news. And then, of course, Catherine Pugh. Like, I'm sorry. I think we can act like that didn't happen, but it did. Our mayor was running a whole side business with Healthy Holly. And we were in the international news. They were talking about Healthy Holly on the BBC. Baltimore City, smack dab. In the middle of the news, the Freddie Gray. Well, I'm sorry, the Baltimore uprising after the murder of Freddie Gray in the center of the news. Making his way into Law and Order SVU as they're talking about, we don't want New York to become the next Baltimore, right? In the center of the news. We had our governor, the one who voted for Ronald Reagan, when he was a little bit concerned about Baltimore getting more than its fair share of vaccines. I mean, I'm thinking, like, how insane is that to think that we got more than our fair share of vaccines? And you know what ended up happening? More white folks from other counties came in Baltimore City and got vaccinated, and we did not. And now here we are again. The Emergent Biosolutions manufacturing plant in East Baltimore, they've been making coronavirus vaccines for months. They have not yet received emergency use authorization. So I'm trying to figure out here with Johnson & Johnson, how are they down in East Baltimore making vaccines and they don't even have emergency use authorization? Exactly what are they doing down there? Because let's talk about it, right? Seriously. If you don't have emergency use authorization, then you actually cannot distribute any vaccines. You can't do one without the other. Because if I understand this correctly, and I would say that I do, I am not a COVID-19, you know, specialist. But I think we've had enough show of doctors on this show from last March. We've read enough material on COVID-19 day in and day out. I'm telling you, I mean, really, if they gave degrees in COVID research, Justine and I would get some degrees. I mean, I actually, as you know, sat through the course at Hopkins online. I am an official licensed contact tracer for COVID-19. If you don't have emergency use authorization from the federal government, then where are you sending out these vaccines? I need to get some more information here. Emergent Biosolutions manufacturing plant in East Baltimore. They've been making the coronavirus vaccine for months now. They had a mix-up of two vaccines ingredients several weeks ago. Not yesterday, not this morning, not on Sunday. Several weeks ago, they mixed up two vaccines ingredients. So now, I was trying to understand this. Now, y'all know I don't really know how to cook. Y'all know that. But I do know that if I'm making cake and it calls for sugar, 2 cups of sugar, if there's 2 cups of sugar and 1 teaspoon of salt, I know if I put 2 cups of salt and 1 teaspoon of sugar that I've mixed up 2 key ingredients and what comes out on the other side is not going to be cake, right? I'm just saying. That's what's going to come out on the other side by mixing up 2 key ingredients. It's not like mixing up, you know, the white sugar and brown sugar, right? We can kind of make that work. It's not like mixing up, you know, the ground up pepper and the coarse pepper. No. They mixed up 2 key ingredients and they ruined about 15 million doses of Johnson & Johnson's vaccines. They forced regulators to delay authorizations of the plant's production lines. The New York Times actually broke this story yesterday. So the mistake does not affect Johnson & Johnson doses that are currently being delivered and used nationwide, but it is making me stop and think for a minute. Now, there seems to be a little hierarchy here when it comes to these vaccines. I'm telling you now, I just want to hear your opinion. When you say you've been vaccinated, when you got the shot, what's the first question people always ask you? Which one did you get? That's always a question. Not like how you feeling, how you doing, what's happening. It's always, I got vaccinated, I got the shot. Which one did you get? Did you get Moderna? Did you get Pfizer? Did you get Johnson & Johnson, the one and done shot, right? That's what they call them, the one and done. Emergent BioSolutions, the manufacturing plant in East Baltimore, they contracted with Johnson & Johnson and with AstraZeneca to produce these vaccines. Now, the company, which is the base of the company, is actually based in Gaithersburg, even though they're down in East Baltimore, where the factory is. They've received millions of dollars, millions in federal dollars, to boost the production of their COVID-19 therapies and vaccines. They're down by the Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center is where they're located. They don't have emergency use authorization. They're not going to tell you how many doses have been stalled because of the lack of authorization. So you're just down there making COVID-19 vaccinations without emergency use authorization. To what end? And now you done messed up 15 million doses. The company is still aiming. Johnson & Johnson's like, you know, it doesn't matter. We're on track. They're on track to hit 100 million doses by the end of May. I want us to understand, it's April 1. This is not an April Fool's joke. They plan to have 100 million doses by the end of May. And they're working with a place, Emergent BioSolutions manufacturing plant, that doesn't even have emergency use authorization. Now, people are a little bit upset about this, and people are a bit concerned. President Biden was supposed to take a tour of this facility, and he canceled the visit. I mean, Biden seems to be real busy. He's doing a lot right now. Biden has already put down the names of 11 judges, just about to let you know, judges and justices, and out of them, 9 are women and 4 are black women. Dude is on the move. He is really working on that level. What I don't understand, before I go to the COVID presser from the mayor, Governor Hogan, and I'm sure you're familiar with Governor Hogan, the governor of Maryland, who voted for Ronald Reagan. Governor Hogan, in his presser earlier today, they asked him about Johnson & Johnson, about what was happening with this vaccine. Now, he gave the standard answer, but what I thought was interesting, that he said at least twice that this doesn't reflect badly on Baltimore. I'm like, wait a minute. Why would it even be called, and he said twice that it doesn't reflect poorly on Baltimore. I'm like, I'm not working in a factory producing vaccines. And it's like, I don't even understand what he means by that. Again, you need to take our name out your mouth, because my concern is that why would what happened at a factory producing vaccines, why would that then call into question Baltimore? That's what concerns me. We didn't even have to put Baltimore in it. The factory just happens to be in East Baltimore. That's still no fault of Baltimoreans. It just irritates me to no end, and not necessarily about the governor, but every time something happens, it's like if Baltimore is even in the vicinity, we just show up on the menu. It does not matter. We don't have to be hungry. You know what I'm saying? We're on the menu. We don't have to be in the area. We're on the menu. This plant and the prop, they have nothing to do with Baltimore City. We're fine. I don't know what's going on. But does it make you nervous? That's my question. For people who have not been vaccinated yet, does this kind of news that they're mixing up ingredients, seriously, y'all, this kind of news that they don't have emergency use authorization, does it give you pause for concern? 410-319-8888. Let's listen to a little bit of the mayor's presser. And I want to tell you on the other side of the mayor's presser what Dr. DeRosa said about the rising number. Let's listen to Mayor Brandon Scott, please.
Everyone, thank you for being here today. I'm joined by Commissioner DeRosa and our police commissioner, Michael Harrison, for an update on COVID-19 in Baltimore. We continue to monitor our COVID-19 metrics in accordance and stay focused on our approach to this pandemic, which has been, as you know, focused on public health and navigated in partnership with our world-class hospitals and health experts here in the city of Baltimore. I have been continuing to visit our mobile vaccination sites across the city. I was just out in East Baltimore this earlier this morning, where we have residents who are ready and happy to get vaccinated. And so that the folks who keep continuing to say that people in the city, in particular African-Americans, don't want to get vaccinated, they're not seeing what I am seeing when I go to these vaccination sites. I truly appreciate that enthusiasm of our residents, and we know that will help to spread the word about how safe this vaccine is throughout our city. I'm proud of our health commissioner and our health department for continuing to focus on equitable distribution of this vaccine. And before I discuss things any further, I want to turn it over to Dr. DeRosa for an update of where we stand and to share an exciting announcement about a new way for Baltimore residents to be matched with vaccine appointments. Dr. DeRosa.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mayor Scott, for your leadership during these challenging times. Baltimore City has recently seen an increase in many of our key indicators, including cases, positivity rate, and hospitalizations. While this is not news I want to deliver in light of the holiday weekend, I want to ensure that Baltimore residents understand how this new surge is different. Today, I will briefly talk about who it is affecting, how vaccinations continue to play an important role, and the personal responsibility each and every resident needs to take in order to care for themselves and their loved one. We'll begin with a review of the latest data, also available on our public-facing dashboard. Our latest 7-day average new case count is 174 cases per day, a 143% increase from 4 weeks ago. Our latest 7-day average positivity is 3.7%, an increase of 106% from 4 weeks ago. To put this in context, we compare case rates per 100,000 residents to adequately account for population variations and to make apples-to-apples comparisons. This week, Baltimore City is averaging about 29 cases per 100,000 residents, a higher rate than both the state of Maryland and the U.S. as a whole. Our hospital utilization rates have remained consistent, with ICUs at 87% capacity, and acute care units increasing slightly to 88% capacity. Fatalities due to COVID-19 are now averaging approximately 2 deaths per day. As of yesterday, we have lost 848 lives to COVID-19. and we have seen 44,609 confirmed cases of COVID-19 here in Baltimore. The new wave of COVID-19 is striking at a time where we are seeing more and more vaccines being distributed in Baltimore City, which has changed the profile of the average COVID-19 hospitalization. This week, 25% of Baltimore City residents overall and almost 50% of residents 60 and over have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 14% of all city residents are fully vaccinated, while 27% of residents 60 and older are fully vaccinated. When we take a look at the age breakdown of COVID-19 cases, we can see differences in how the vaccines are affecting the health of our residents. For more than a year, residents 70 and older have consistently experienced among the highest incidence rates of COVID-19 cases across all age groups. However, beginning in early March, for the first time during the pandemic in the city, the weekly COVID incidence rate for ages 70 plus years are the lowest among all age groups. What this indicates is that vaccines work. Younger cohorts, specifically those aged 20 to 29, and 40 to 49 are now the leaders in new COVID-19 cases. Essentially, Gen Z, millennials, and generation.
So what is going on? That was Dr. DeRosa at the COVID presser with the mayor. I want to give you two things, and then I'm going to go to break. One is the highest numbers now are within the 20 to 29-year-old age group and the 40 to 49-year-old age group. And our cases have increased 143% from 4 weeks ago. Our positivity rate has increased by 106% from 4 weeks ago. Hospitalizations are on the rise, and we have the highest rates in Maryland and in the United States as a whole. I don't even know what that means. Let's talk about that and our concern around how we go forward at this point when we return. Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. So here we are rolling into another resurrection weekend, Easter weekend, as some of us call it. I know not everybody celebrates Easter, and I'm not telling you to celebrate Easter. You do what you want to do. But tomorrow begins the resurrection commemoration. I'm not going to call it a celebration, resurrection commemoration. We've been in Holy Week since Palm Sunday, last Sunday, and we've been in the period of Lent, for those of you who've been giving up something for Lent. I talk about that because it was 1 year ago that as we were rolling into Resurrection Weekend, that we were all nervous about COVID-19. It was everywhere, doing everything. We couldn't get our hands wrapped around it. A year later, here in Baltimore, it's everywhere doing everything, and we can't get our hands wrapped around it. They said there are at least 600, is what I heard the governor talk about, different type of variants that are coming through here, like 600 cases with all the variants. And the biggest one is this UK variant, right, that's making its way through. And they said variants, just so we're on the same page, and then I'll go to James. Because I was trying to wrap my head around it. We had a doctor on the show, a researcher, that just helped us figure it out, that what happens when COVID-19 transfers? So I want to use myself and Justina, if I may, as examples. So I have COVID-19. I come in contact with Justina. Maybe we take our mask off because we're sitting out in a restaurant. We're eating, having fun. We're in the home. Okay, so I have COVID-19, and she doesn't. This is when Dr. Commager was on our show. That if Justina catches COVID-19 from me, there is a chance that when COVID-19 makes the leap from me to Justina, that it has to replicate itself. Like, there's a process that takes place. And in the replication process, mistakes are made in the code, right? So that the variant that Justina ends up with is slightly different from the variant that I have. Now, if you've been vaccinated, understand, I want us to hear this, because, you know, I've been fully vaccinated, Justina's had her shot. Even then, we can still catch COVID-19. So if I have a variant that's been kind of slightly altered, I come in contact with Justina, and let's say, you know, and Tony's there. Tony has not been vaccinated. So it shows up and it replicates itself in Justina, but mistakes are made, and that's how you get a variant, with those mistakes. Now, they've seen that Pfizer and Moderna are pretty effective in not keeping you from catching COVID-19, but keeping you from experiencing the worst impact of COVID-19, where you end up in the hospital, on a ventilator, you can't breathe. They don't know if you're going to be a long hauler. They don't know. Like, we got to be clear that there's so much they still don't know. But Tony hasn't had either shot. And so when the variant shows up in Tony, that this new variant, and this is just the UK one, we're not talking about the Japanese one, the one they saw in South Africa, there's one they're seeing in Connecticut, but this UK one is more transmissible, which means it spreads a lot quicker, and it also has a greater impact. So we're seeing those variants make their way through Maryland as a whole, and Baltimore more specifically. We have Charles on the phone. I'm sorry, we have James on the phone from Baltimore. Then I'll go to Charles from Baltimore County. James, how are you? Thank you for calling.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I was calling to answer your question about what I think you said the governor said about the, well, see, there's a, the ex-commissioner, there's a morning sports talk show. The ex-commissioner is a personality on that show. So they're what's happening part of the show. They announced what happened to the vaccine at the Baltimore plant.
Yes.
And what he said was that we're already the laughing stock of the country because of, you know, started with what Donald Trump said about Baltimore last year.
Right.
And the fact now this happened, like most of us would take it like you took it. Well, I don't work there. This doesn't have nothing to do. But people that he deals with, they point at different places and talk about them like that. And so it's important for him to have a positive outlook, look on Baltimore, so that he makes him look good. He's the one that brought that up. I mean, I guess the governor heard that, and that's why he repeated twice that this does not have effect on Baltimore. But that's the mindset of a person like that, worrying about what other people are thinking instead of trying to come up with some ideas about how to make Baltimore look good on the national scene. That's all I have.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. 410-319-8888. I believe Charles is ready now from Baltimore County. Charles, how are you?
Yes, how are you doing, Dr. King?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm having a problem with this vaccine stuff myself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that there are multiple, there's multiple strains.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have multiple variants. Well, we only have, what, three experimental vaccines, right?
No, there are more than three, but I know there are three right now that are in rotation. But AstraZeneca, there's at least 10 to 12 of them that are being worked on. They just haven't had emergency use authorization in the United States of America. But go ahead.
But when you're saying being worked on and experimental, none of them have been proven. Now, when we talk about vaccines in the past, the vaccines developed for the flu were for the previous year.
Yes.
So in the previous year, we're talking about what, at least 10 different types of coronavirus, and now we have the variant added in, the types of variant, which they couldn't have had time to orchestrate a new vaccine to figure in the whole thing because COVID-19 keeps morphing every single day.
Yes. Okay. So everything you're saying is correct. And I just want to let you know, folks, that we actually will have a cardiologist, Dr. Sinatra, on next Tuesday to talk about long haulers. So we're definitely going to continue to drill down deep into this. So, Charles, just I appreciate you giving us the update. Everything you said, we have talked about. Did you want to add something else, sir? Okay. All right. So let's go on to Belinda from Anne Arundel County. Belinda, how are you?
Good afternoon, Dr. K. I'm well, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I am actually a return caller. First and foremost, I wanted to say thank you very much because when I called, I was in the midst of my COVID battle.
Yes, I
and you offered mental health care to me. So I wanted to thank you first and foremost for that. I wanted to share with your audience that I am a long hauler, but I wanted to share a little bit just because I know folks are concerned about the vaccine. My parents and I all had COVID at the same time. Mm-hmm. CDC at the time had 11 different symptoms. I had 10 of the 11 symptoms.
Wow.
My father was in the hospital. My mother was primarily asymptomatic. So just within our family, we had three different outcomes. For me, as I said, I am a long hauler. I haven't yet received the vaccine because I'm still battling, even though I tested negative in December. This is nothing to play with. It really isn't. I'm only here by the grace of God. Clots were found in my lungs and my leg 2.5 months after I tested positive. I am now, I have fluid in my body that they're still trying to get rid of. I am on steroids to try to open up my lungs and continue to have my lungs open.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on a course of action now just to be able to walk in the grocery store without being exhausted. So please, please, please get the vaccine and wear your mask. That's the only thing that I can say.
So do you know that you said, I know that you said you're a long hauler, because we're going to have a cardiologist on to explain more about that. Are you experiencing ongoing symptoms? Is that what you mean? Because people may not be familiar with the long hauling of this disease.
So my ongoing symptoms, Dr. K, are the fatigue that everyone seems to talk about. I'm always tired, and I don't like it. I have insomnia. Like I said, I have blood clots that were found. I have fluid retention. I am deconditioned. That was a term that my new pulmonologist has shared with me.
Mm.
So no one really knows how long this will last. Like I said, I'm 4.5 months in right now from my date of exposure.
Okay.
I'm just glad to be here. I wasn't admitted to the hospital. So I had to fight my battle at home alone. I stand with my oxygen levels going down low. So there's a lot of things that, by the grace of God and the ignorance, sometimes ignorance is a good thing, or I probably would have freaked out more than I did before. But I've had to fight for care. I have a decent job that allows for disability and insurance, but that didn't stop me from being rejected from, you know, admittance to the hospital. Once my blood clots were found in my lungs, I was asked to go back to the hospital to get my legs reviewed, a sonogram to see if I had clots in my legs. And even the hospital then they refused to do the scans because they already knew I had clots in my lungs. So it's been a battle for the last 4.5 months of my life.
Well, let me ask you people are wondering if you have ongoing intense pain. Is it pain that you can still move around through? Is it debilitating pain? And do over-the-counter medications help at all?
So over-the-counter did not help me, but I have to preface, everybody's different. As far as the pain, I had pain in my chest off and on for about 2.5 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that. What I do remember is I coughed every day for 2 months. And my doctor told me that I bruised my diaphragm because of it. And I did have an echocardiogram. Again, I shared I have a new pulmonologist because the first pulmonologist did nothing for me. And I do mean nothing. I had to fight her for everything. So I now have a new one. The new one ordered the echocardiogram because I've since learned that there is a correlation between COVID and heart damage. They did not find any damage at all, but they believe that there is lung damage, scar tissue, because of COVID. So what does that mean to me long term? I have no idea. A year ago, I was actually doing virtual training since the gym was closed. And now I'm just happy to walk an hour. I posted something on Instagram last Friday. I was just happy to be able to walk an hour. But I overdid it and slept for the next 3 days. So it's going to take some time to get back to how I was. But I'm not as bad as I used to be, and I have to hold on to that.
Well, I'm glad that you're still up and running through, and thank you for keeping us in the loop. We continue to stand with you, and just so sorry. And some people are saying that, you know, they have the same symptoms. Lily Dorsey says she has the same symptoms, plus swollen lymph nodes, plus 2 cases of shingles since July 25th, 2020. Deborah Vaughn said she had the #2 vaccine on Friday, and that she's dizzy. And just trying to get her energy back up. So people are at kind of different ends of the spectrum, dealing with the impact of the shot, but also, like you, being a long hauler, which, as we know, is just a whole new thing that we're trying to understand, because, you know, we never talked about long hauling before until COVID-19.
Right, my Dr. K, I'll just add this. I have multiple friends who are breast cancer survivors. And as we share, as I share with them what I have experienced, then they shared with me that it sounds very similar to what they went through, which I thought was weird. Don't know if those in the medical field, I'm learning a lot, but I'm not in the medical field. So I don't know if they see that similarity. But so we keep each other lifted. But I also share what I've experienced, because maybe some of what they went through and their care, especially as far as getting back in their endurance, that may help me in the long run. But my doctor, the current pulmonologist, has me on a 6-week plan. I see her in another week and a half, and then I guess I'll have a new checkpoint of what I need to do. But I wanted to call you, Dr. K, because I cannot thank you enough, because I was really, it's still really, really hard, because I'm still trying to care for my parents and I'm still trying to battle COVID. But I thank you for the mental health piece.
So,
and
much.
For those who are battling, I just wanted to say that as an African-American woman and family, we do survive. We do exist. Because I know oftentimes African-Americans are seen as the ones who die the most. And we do, but we also survive, too. And I want to throw that out there. And it's become my mission to at least share my story, to let folks know that long haulers exist. I was actually diagnosed with COVID pneumonia. So COVID pneumonia is a thing. And COVID pneumonia survivors and COVID pneumonia long haulers exist too. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity
to share my story.
I'm
glad you did. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Folks, when we start talking about COVID-19, and I know we talk about it all the time, but it's important, because This is where we are. I mean, it's the long hauling is something that's very new with COVID-19, and something that we're going to have to understand. 410-319-8888, talking about COVID and the impact of it. We have Miss A on the phone. She also wants to say a little bit about her experience with COVID-19. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, how are you? Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me, Dr. K. I'm really nervous, and this is, like, first time I'm calling.
Oh, thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me on. I developed, I got COVID-19 in January, and I went to the Express Care. I didn't know. I just was really sick. And the doctor there said, you just COVID-19 positive. Just take this. And you'll be okay. I developed a fever for 3 to 4 days straight. My pressure went sky high. I went back the following week, and a different doctor said to me, oh, it's nothing we can do for you. You need to go to the emergency room right away. Went to the emergency room. I was there probably a week or more. They said, Miss, you have COVID. You have double lung COVID-19 pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And we need permission, verbal permission from somebody in case we have to vent you. We don't know if you're going to make it. You're at the end of the corner. You could go left or right. I'm nervous even saying it. So my kids had to give verbal permission for a lot of things for them to do to me. They CAT scan me. They look for blood clots in my lungs and in my legs. They did, you know, everything they could do for me for the longest time, and they did take good care of me. Good. Eventually, I did get better, and they sent me home just for me to have to go back a week later for getting sick again. I could not breathe. They put me on steroids. They don't know what's going to happen later either. I have to see a lung doctor, and I cough every day, several times a day. Let me express this to you. My primary care doctor did, within 30 days after I got out of the hospital, she made an appointment for me to get the COVID shot. I did, and got sicker than I did when I went in that hospital the first time. My pressure went up to 178 over 134. I had a temperature of 100.9. My heart was beating at 119. It's the worst thing I ever had happen to me in my entire life. Wow. And I'm still dealing with it as we speak today.
I'm so glad that you called in, and I'm glad that you're still here and sharing your story about what is happening. How are you doing now?
I'm still not together. I know physically I'm not. I cough all the time. They have me on oxygen too. And I'm just not good. They're not even, my doctor's not even recommending that I get the second shot.
Now, not recommend you didn't get the second shot because you are going through what you're going through right now, or?
Well, because my everything that happened to me when I had COVID happened again after the shot, and that's the first shot. I didn't even get the second shot, and they're a little wary that they don't know what would happen if I got the second shot.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm absolutely sorry to hear that. And we're standing with you. Thank you so much for calling and letting us know. We will continue to stand with you. We will continue to just pray for you. Those of us who believe in the power of prayer, we understand that all things are possible to those that believe. All things are possible. You're not alone. You are not alone.
Thank you so much.
No, not a problem, sister. So, folks, we're standing here. You know, we're just opening up the phones as we go into this resurrection weekend. And I know not everybody follows it. I know that. But I do. And I'm thinking about it. And I'm thinking about, you know, ways that we can be grateful. What I think is important, and I just want to have you think about, as you're looking here and you're thinking about being grateful, what is it that comes to mind? What is it that you're thinking about? And how can you spend more time on that this weekend than on the trauma that we're experiencing? I think it's important for us to think about the ways in which we can overcome what is happening, the ways in which we can stand strong with what is going on, the ways in which we can see ourselves beyond this situation. I'm troubled, and I'm thinking a lot about where we go from here. Maybe I just need some self-care. Maybe that's what's going on, because I'm feeling a little challenged right now. You know, I'm upset because my favorite crab cake place has been closed for a couple of weeks now. So maybe that's what got me all stressed out. Maybe it's the variants circling through Baltimore that's got me stressed out. Maybe, and this is what's going to get you, maybe it's the fact that I'm just going to go ahead and tell you that I actually, for the first time since January of 2019, I actually made a flight reservation. Y'all, I can't believe how stressful that was. Something I never thought about before. was very stressful for me. You know that my, y'all know that my kid's a fencer, and we are in the countdown mode to the North American Cup. It's called the NAC. It's one of the three biggest fencing tournaments, you know, for young people. So you have the Junior Olympics, which takes place in June. You have the Nationals, which takes place in June. And then you have the North American Cup, the NAC. The NAC is happening this year in Texas. And the Junior Olympics and the Nationals will both be held in Philadelphia, which I'm happy about. And so I had to do a lot of soul searching. A lot of soul searching about traveling to Texas. I mean, I had to do some serious soul searching about, am I ready for what that's going to consist of? I mean, it's interesting because I look at my own son and I'm like, okay, so you are in countdown mode. My kid graduates. He's got 27 days left in school. Like, my baby is getting ready to graduate, and he's going to be fencing in college, and he's got to go to the NAC. And so I'm trying to find a way to just be okay with that. We were in Virginia this past weekend, where he had to go to the RJCC. I don't know what that is, the Fairfax Challenge. But he's back out competing. It's interesting because the world feels like it's wide open. And in my heart of hearts, I don't think it is. You can no longer keep yourself inside. I don't think that's a plan anymore. I think that the world is fast becoming those that are vaccinated and those that are not. 410-319-8888. We have Jamila on the phone. Jamila, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dr. K. I hope you're doing well, too. I do understand the anxiety because I have all that anxiety as well. But I just wanted to speak to your last caller who is going through her COVID experience and had one shot, and her doctor has recommended that she not take the second shot. There was a lady on the news recently who was also a COVID survivor and who had one shot and had bad side effects after the first shot. But she reported that after she took the second shot, all of her symptoms went away. So I just wanted to throw that out there so that she can look into this particular lady's situation. I don't remember the name, but it was on the national news, and maybe that's something for her to look into and decide whether or not she should go forward. Because the bottom line is that we just want everybody to be healthy. We want them to be well. We want everybody to be safe.
Yeah, I agree. And so then I ask you, Jamila, given what's going on, given how we are, and given what's happening in the world, how do you keep yourself inside at this point? I don't know how you can keep yourself inside. It's just the world is moving forward.
Yeah, it's a day-by-day decision. I'm fully vaccinated. My husband is fully vaccinated. Our children are in the process of getting vaccinated. It's a day-by-day situation. We pray. We keep masking, washing our hands, and social distancing, but it's just a day-by-day thing that we have to take, and we have to look at each day and just weigh each side and whatever is coming before us.
Yeah, because this is, I just don't think the I'm going to stay inside until everything's done plan works anymore. There is no end. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I just don't think there's inside anymore. The world is out. And so either you're going to get vaccinated or you're just going to roll the dice and take your chance. Or right, you're going to be knocked out anyway if you don't have that vaccination card.
Yeah.
You're not even going to have to worry about it because if what they're saying is correct and Rutgers is saying you got to be vaccinated in the fall, other colleges are going to follow. Now the airlines are talking about it. So you can say, I'm not going to get vaccinated until things work out. You may not be able to participate in anything.
Right. You know, I think not getting vaccinated is not wise. I do understand people are hesitant. I know people are hesitant. I'm talking to people who are hesitant. But I just don't think that's wise. And I think we need to just, you know, you need to just step out there. I've shared my experience. You know, we did, my husband and I, neither one of us had any major side effects. We had a sore arm, and that's about it. But, I mean, you know, we just have to be wise. We have to be wise. And you know, think about the overall effect. I mean, do you want to be 6 feet under, or you want to have a sore arm? You know, we don't have much choice in this.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Thank you so much, Jamila. So, folks, I want to end it here. And I want to end it by reminding you about the importance of what I'm calling radical Black self-care. Y'all, we got to love each other. I know that sounds like everyone always says it, but really, I mean, when nobody else is looking, I mean, when it's not put on social media, I mean, when it's not just to kind of check a box, I'm saying we got to really love each other and love on each other, because they're trying to break us. I don't mean they as in the individual, I mean the system as a whole. If you are actively watching the Derek Chauvin trial, then take some time to take a walk. Take some time to take care of yourself. If you have not been vaccinated, then be careful. And if you have been vaccinated, then do the right thing and keep your mask on anyway. We're going to have a couple of doctors on the show next week. We're going into Resurrection Weekend. I'm going to say that we are glad that you are still with us. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve you in this way. Thank you so much to my producer, Justina Pollard, and to my board op, Andre Melton, and to the team to make it all work here. Keep it tuned here for the Culture with Faraji Muhammad.